CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, everybody. It's Wednesday. Yeah, for a lot of people, their favorite day of the week. Why? Because it's in the middle, and from here on, it's downhill. For other people, it's named after the god Odin. Did you know that?
No.
So you didn't know that? You knew that, Gord.
No, I was asking how that works.
So, Tuesdays...
Otherwise it would be called Odin Day.
Well, it is. It's called Woden's Day. Woden, that's why some people say Wednesday, some people say Woden's Day or Wednesday.
Okay, that explains a weird bit of spelling that's been like the bane of school children forever.
That's right. So Odin, of course, the father of gods in Norse mythology.
Well, he was Chris Hemsworth's dad.
That's right.
Yes.
He was played by Anthony Hopkins.
I mean,
Marvel comic series.
Chris Hemsworth is going to be the fruit of your loins. They're going to be divine loins.
Anthony Hopkins, of course, speaks a lot like this. Anyway, so yeah, Odin, and then Tuesday is named after Tyr, the god of war, and Thursday is Thor's Day.
Yeah.
And Friday is Freya's Day.
Who
that? Gareth is very white. Still very, very white.
Stop it. I'm trying to teach you
I'm
things.
I'm interested, and this is useful. Isn't Monday something
Ben, you're so
to do
political.
With the moon?
What?
Isn't Monday something to do with the moon?
I can't remember what Monday is. I can't remember where Monday comes from. I've never had an interest in Monday, so I've never bothered to look it up.
I think everyone hated Monday from day one, so it was just like,
stop piece
moaning
of shit,
Monday.
But there it is. So Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, all named after Norse gods. And I know this especially because I've been recently listening to an audiobook by Neil Gaiman, the guy who did American Gods.
Yes.
And he's just recently done a book called Norse Mythology.
I got I don't know how long it is in pages, but I got about 3 hours into it and then realized that he was now referencing people he discussed an hour ago, and I couldn't
keep
up. You
couldn't remember who they were.
I could not keep up. I was like, Schmollenberg, crusher of rocks, re-entered the fray, having had sex with Nyun Nyun. And like, I forgot who that is. And it's an audiobook, so I can't find a reference and go find out. I was completely lost. That is complicated shit.
Well, one of my favorite things in the last 2 years has been listening to Stephen Fry narrating his book about Greek mythology called Mythos.
Okay.
My God, what an incredible roller coaster ride through the foundational beliefs of ancient Greece. Just absolutely beautiful. Stories about gods and men and animals and war and chariots and fire and sun.
Is it followable?
Well, you do kind of get a little bit lost in some places, but I have an interesting memory. My memory is good for useless and pointless facts, and not particularly good. Like, for example, you ask me anything I wrote about in matric, and look, it's a long time ago. I wouldn't know. If you ask me about, what happened to
chemistry things. Although that's not useless, but for an example, it's obscure.
It is obscure, but I remember that stuff because I'm interested in it. Yeah. So if I'm interested in something, I'll remember it. And it's weird. I'll retain that knowledge for a long time.
But specifically the two of you, Gordon and Gareth, you guys often reference audiobooks. Can you just take that in easily? Because I battle with it, actually.
I was thinking distracted, I'm sure, like you.
Yeah, I can't. I'm just like, what's happening? Okay,
I've moved on. 5 minutes later, I'm listening to something.
That's why I can't listen to podcasts of serious or tough subject matter, because I find myself spazzing out, and then I didn't follow, and then I've lost myself.
You're such a millennial seer.
No, yeah, it's not in that way. I think it's just how we take in information. I just can't.
There's a couple of variables. I mean, I don't know if it's going to be for everybody, but I think also it's like a discipline. You get used to kind of being focused on an audiobook. They do have the back button, which you can set if you're using like a legit, i.e. non-pirated. You can download them as MP3s and listen to them like you would any music.
Mm-hmm.
But if you listen through a proper player, like the Audible player, there's a back button and a forward button, which you can set to be 5 seconds, 10 seconds, 30 seconds, and you can just skip back over a chunk that you've missed pretty easily.
Yeah, that's very useful.
It also, they're not all created equal, you know, like it depends on how it's written, and then it also depends on how it's read.
Mm-hmm.
Like an average book read by a great narrator is like it can redeem, a good narrator can redeem a not brilliant book. But no matter how good a book is, if it's got an awful, if it's read badly, it's harder to follow. So, and for some people, it's a case of, okay, maybe it's just not for you. And for other people, it's a case of, well, you know, give it a proper try. Find a good book with a good narrator, get stuck in. And if by the end of it, you're still not into it, then cool. So it's a case of like, it's not for everybody, maybe, but also, you know, you don't know unless you're giving it a proper try. It's changed my life, literally. The amount of books that I consume over the last 5 years is 5 to 10 times what it used to be. I love it. It also makes me like traffic.
Yeah, that's what it's done for me. I used to, you know what, you've traveled with me. I'm not very good at dealing with traffic and other cars. And I mean, even this morning, there was this almost very near pileup on the way here. You know how it goes. People slam on brakes, and everybody has to slam on brakes behind them.
So scary. You're always worried about the person behind you.
Oh, my God. So you're looking in your rearview mirror. You're looking in front of you. I mean, there must have been – it felt like there was a ball here between us, but it was probably about a meter between me and the car in front of me. You can never judge accurately until you get out of the car.
Sometimes having a ball here between you and a person is fine. But yes.
But it does. It helps. I just want you to hear, like, here's Stephen Fry getting all impassioned about one of the myths. And it's quite an interesting one because he compares it to AI. I don't know if you've heard this before. But he compares one of the Greek myths to artificial intelligence.
I'm passionate also about technology. I'm very interested and always have been. Two of the primal and most loved Greek myths to do with the creation of mankind. It starts with the creation of the gods, what Hesiod calls the theogony, the birth of the gods. But then our champion, the titan Prometheus, made human beings in clay, and the spit of Zeus and the breath of Athena gave them life. But Zeus refused to allow us to have fire. And the fire, I think, means both literal fire, to allow us to become Bronze Age man, and to create weapons and to cook meat and to frighten the fierce animals and to become the strongest physically and technically, but also the internal fire of self-consciousness and creativity, the divine fire. And Zeus didn't want us to have it. And Prometheus stole fire from heaven, gave it to man, and Zeus was so angry that he punished Prometheus by chaining him to a mountainside, and he was immortal, Prometheus. Every day his liver was torn out by an eagle, and it grew back, and every day it was torn out again for perpetuity until he was rescued by Heracles. Now, I mention this, and the other punishment was that Zeus and the other gods created Pandora, the all-gifted, that is what Pandora, all-gifted, and sent her down as the first woman. She had everything, but he also gave her this jar, which we sometimes call a box, which actually was the mistaken translation of a very famous Netherlandish intellectual called Erasmus, who mistook the Latin pithos and picus, the two words, and so he translated it as a box, but it should actually be a jar. But Pandora came to Earth, if you remember, and she was told that she shouldn't look into the jar, and she was beautiful. She had everything. All the gifts of all the gods were given to her. But she had this curiosity, and she opened the jar, and I'm sure you all know the story. Out flew hardship, lies, deceit, murder, pestilence, all the ills of the world, and the golden age was over. She slammed the lid back on, and one little fairy was left inside, Elpis, Hope. Now, that's fine. That seems like an interesting story. It's an interpretation. But actually, if you think about it at the present, firstly, the Prometheus story, as soon as mankind shook off the chains of religion and the church, we became incredibly interested in the Prometheus story, because it suddenly said, we don't have to bow down and apologize to a god. Gods have to apologize to us for denying us our independence and our sense of ourselves and our fire. And so Shelley wrote Prometheus Unbound, the poem. Beethoven wrote a Prometheus Overture, all within 5 years of each other. The height of the Enlightenment, if you like, and the beginning of the Romantic era. Now, I'm going to put that to one side, and I'm going to go back to 1989, when I became fascinated by this extraordinary new development in which you could network computers to a network of networks, which was starting to be called the Internet. There was no web. There was no graphical application. It was all text-based. But I was really excited by it. And as it grew, I became more and more excited. I thought, this is the biggest and most exciting bringing together of human beings in the history of our planet. It is the all-gifted. It will give us freedom of access to knowledge. We will share things, art, politics. Boundaries will be dissolved. We will learn to love each other. We will all be brothers. Like in Beethoven's Ninth, you know, we will all be brothers. It would be fantastic. And social media came and the Arab Spring, and I thought there would be no more tribalism, no more hatred, no more racism. This would be wonderful. But what happened? The lid opened, and out came trolls, out came abusers, out came racists and tribalists and insulters and the worst kind of humanity. It was an exact replay of Pandora's box. And I thought that was so interesting that the Greeks had this understanding that when we have something that seems perfect, there is no possibility but that it also contains its opposite. And now, this is the most important part. I'm sorry to...
One more God, because you are my God.
No, this is the most important part. I guarantee you, whether you like to think it or not, that although we know, through Darwin and science and genes, that we were not created by an intelligent designer, in 100 years' time, we can guarantee there will be sapient creatures, sapient beings on this earth, that have been intelligently designed. You can call them robots, you can call them compounds of augmented biology and artificial intelligence, but they will exist. The first person to live to 200 years old has already been born. The future is enormous. It's never been more existentially transformative. And my question is this: when the Prometheus, who makes the first really impressive piece of robotic AI, like Frankenstein, but like Prometheus, back in the Greek myth, they will have a question. Do we give it fire? Do we give these creatures self-knowledge, self-consciousness, an autonomy that is greater than any other machine has ever had and will be similar to ours? In other words, shall we be Zeus and deny them fire because we're afraid of them? Because they will destroy us. And the Greeks and the human beings did destroy the gods. They no longer needed them. And it is very possible we will create a race of sapient beings who will not need us.
And will they be as imperfect?
Wow. I mean, that's... I love the way the guy thinks and talks. Yeah. He's such a genius.
He's amazing.
It's such a beautiful way of using the language as well.
I watched him and Jordan Peterson form a debate team against a religious guy and an angry liberal feminist, and you know, people are always like, you know,
what a great combination.
This one destroys that one, and it's like, well, it wasn't really about trying to destroy anybody, but the closed-mindedness of the liberal feminist, liberal in general, but with a feminist bent, and the pro-black evangelist preacher man that were on the one team, and Fry opened up and said, you know, like, I just want to make it clear that on principle, I'm paraphrasing, obviously, I'm not doing a great job because it's Stephen Fry, but on principle, I don't agree with most of what Jordan Peterson says. Mm-hmm. But I do agree with him in the sense that you know, our liberalism and our insisting on political correctness, because the topic was, is political correctness a good thing? But, you know, no, you guys are missing doing anything about the problems you're getting so worked up about. You're talking about it and intellectualizing it and complaining and ranting and whining and saying we need to have these rules.
Yeah.
But what you should actually be doing is going, let's not have a conversation. Let's just be better. And the way that he articulated that, because as I said, I'm never going to do it justice, but the way he articulated saying, this gentleman that's on my team and I are both against political correctness, him because he thinks it does more harm than good and shouldn't be made into rules, official legislation, and me because I think you guys are wasting your bloody time with it, stop talking about how unfair it all is and go and do something about it like he did when he was a gay activist in the 80s.
He's a lovely guy to listen to. Jennifer says, I've listened to Mythos 3 times. I got confused a lot, but absolutely awesome book. I love the chapter on Psyche and Cupid.
Hmm.
Yeah. Well, there are lots of stories in there that are, they're just foundational to so much of what we understand about civilization today. Don't forget, there's lots of interesting stuff on cliffcentral.com today. It is a Wednesday, so you can go and take a look at our lineup on the website. But there are plenty of really, really good series, and you can catch up with any of those. Let's start with Man to Man.
Or Smart Money.
Well, okay, you want to hear about Smart Money?
Yes, please.
All right, I haven't told you about Smart Money. Smart Money is a series of financial tips for different life stages. Greg, who works here, and Dory and Celeste and all of them who had something to do with putting this together, they all told me that this series changed their lives. They're all thinking differently about money now.
Ooh.
They're all thinking about saving. They're all thinking about how they can cut down on expenses in certain areas. So it's changed their lives. It might change yours. You can ask them about it. I'll bring them in here one morning and they can tell you themselves. So you know I'm not making it up. Maya Fisher-French is the host. She speaks to various experts as they help to find us answers to pressing financial questions. Questions about financial wellness, saving for retirement, making sure you have the correct health care, navigating the gig economy, saving a millennial from a millennial perspective.
Saving a millennial. Yeah. That's also good.
How getting married affects you financially and so much more. It's all brought to you by Discovery, getting your money right for your life. The show is out every Wednesday at 9 a.m., but all 12 episodes of the podcast are available on cliffcentral.com, on the Cliff Central app, or anywhere you prefer to get your podcasts. Go and subscribe now, and you can download the whole lot. Best way to do it, as Gord says, when it comes to audiobooks, you want to use the proper apps. So when you want to download and subscribe to any of our podcasts, use the Cliff Central app, or if you prefer, go along to the podcast app on your phone, download it there, and subscribe. Then you don't have to think about it. It just downloads automatically. Such a win. All right. Gordo, what have you been up to? I haven't seen you in a while.
Since last Wednesday, I have...
what have you been doing?
Took it a bit easy. I've been a little under the weather. It's beginning to be a little bit irritating. And
what happened?
Well, I'm just fed up. I'm typically a person that kind of gets a cold or a flu kind of once every season. So, two a year. Usually timed around the change of the seasons. But if you remember correctly...
But young Gordon, you should wear more clothing. You're here in your shirt again, brandishing your tattoos like in summer.
I'm not cold.
Okay.
Well, it's a start point, though.
I also believe that like bacteria and germs and viruses make you sick and not having no jersey on.
Yeah, well, you got to have a defense
towards
these things.
I'm fat. I'm hot now. Trust me.
Now that I've thought about it, I've never seen you in any sort of second or third layer.
I wear a hoodie in winter, always. Anyway, I just get a little bit irritated when I feel like I don't deserve it. Like when you were away and Ben was filling in and I famously didn't come because I had flu. That was a little over 2 months ago.
Who could ever forget that?
Yes.
That time you completely dropped us.
Famously. Yes. Abandoned us.
In the time of need. Having promised to not do so, that was about 2 months ago, a little over 2 months ago. So I've had a bit of a cold the last few days. But other than that, I've been audio booking a lot, and I watched Disenchantment.
That's good, huh?
Disenchanted.
Do you like Disenchantment?
I liked it enough to finish it. I did enjoy it. I didn't think it was unbelievable, but it was good enough to make me want to keep watching and find out what happens.
Yeah.
Well, look, it's obviously no Rick and Morty, but it's still a good show.
It's not Rick and Morty, and it's not Futurama, but it's definitely worth watching if you like that kind of thing. Some of the humor is very funny. There's a little pet hate that I have in the universe that it's the biggest. Perpetrators are Coca-Cola's advertising. Not so much in the last few years, but the glugging, pouring, swallowing sound effect whenever anyone's drinking.
Mm.
That's sometimes
that drives you crazy.
It drives me up the wall. It's like especially the pour sound, glut, 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 and the big loud swallow.
Yeah.
They have that. They, every time anyone drinks anything, it has to reverberate through your house, the sound of peristalsis. And that is like Coca-Cola ads used to
I know
to
what you mean. It irritates
Coke ads
me
used to
too,
be all
yeah.
about the cracking of the bottle,
and
then the
glug,
sound
glug,
of the
glug,
pouring
yeah.
making the ice crack, then the glugging noise as the thing pours, and then the person's loud, disgusting swallow, and then that like, so, gluck, at the end, and I'm just like, if that person was in my house, I'd beat them to death with a frying pan.
There's an actual condition.
I'm not like
you respond. Yeah, no, no, no. You know, you suffer
from a condition.
Yeah, you suffer from
a
condition.
That, like,
misophonia.
Yeah, I'm not like hugely. If people eat and I
is
can
that what it's
them.
Called? Misophonia.
Look, some people are just disgusting. Some people are just disgusting when they eat, and that's like not okay. But I'm not like unbelievably anal about it. I'm not one of those people that gets all upset about like really nothing. If I can vaguely hear a person eating, it's not the end of the world. But it's taking that sound effect, sticking a microphone inside the throat of a person with throat problems, recording their swallowing disgusting sound, and making that 30 times louder than it needs to be in your TV ads for 2 decades. That makes me hate the Coca-Cola company. So
out of the entire series,
the fact that
you took that up.
Princess Bean is an alcoholic, and everybody eats and drinks in the show, but she drinks booze a lot. So every time she downs a drink or drinks
they
a
make
drink,
that noise.
I've got to listen to that sound, and it kills me to
death. All right, Gord, that is the most horrible description.
Gord,
that was
11 minutes.
I almost felt...
Sorry for speaking on the radio show.
No. I felt it the whole way through. I got it. What I want to do quickly before we get to the 5 things, Sia, do you know what's going on with Bonang? Why is she trending at the moment? What's the story?
Stars.
Okay.
Can you help me understand?
It's quite a long story. I'll try to like summarize it into a minute or so.
I thought we'd finished with Bonang. I thought, you know.
She, a Sunday World, the publication, actually released on Sunday that they had said that she has some sort of SARS issues.
Uh-oh.
And she owes some tax. And so on Sunday, Bonang refuted this, saying, this is absolute trash. It's all filth that you're making up. And actually, to prove that it's all filth, I'm going to take Sunday World to court.
Huh.
Then you'll see, if you're looking at Twitter, the Twitter trends this morning, the second person who's trending is a guy named Phil, and he's a popular South African blogger.
Phil Mpela.
Yes.
Okay.
Who's the one now saying, Bonang, why are you even paying attention to this? This is how it all literally started yesterday afternoon.
These are lies. This is garbage. This is filth. Oh.
Exactly.
Is that Bonang?
Oh, yes, yeah, yes, right. Yes. Phil literally just started.
So he's a blogger and he starts like saying, giving her advice.
Yeah, well, just saying, why are you even giving them much attention? Because if this is all filth, keep quiet and move on, and that's how it won't be a bigger thing. And Bonang, who's really known to be this lady and be very dignified, she responded by saying, go fuck yourself yesterday. So, which is like, whoa,
sure.
What is
so
going on?
Exploding.
And so it was a whole back and forth between Phil and Bonang, with ultimately Bonang threatening to release some things on Phil, some dirt that she has.
Ooh.
And then Phil then says, remember, as in the last tweets that were involved in this last night was when Phil said to Bonang, remember, I was with you in Sun City in 2012.
What happened?
That was last night.
Now, don't you want to know, even if you don't care about Bonang and Phil, right? Don't you want to know?
No, I still don't want to know. I'm so
like,
glad I'm not a person whose life is such that I look at people who have other lives and get really interested and like opinionated and partisan about watching. It's like... I'm glad I'm not a full-time footballer. Bad example, because if I was a world-class top-tier footballer, that life would be awesome. But I don't sit and watch football players play football and go, man, I wish I was playing right now. I'm glad I'm on the couch and they playing and I can just like rant my opinion. But I think of it like that. Like, why are some people so interested in spectating lives? Like, that just to me, it's completely uninteresting.
It's the same as being excited about a TV show. It's the exact same thing. It's just
in what way?
Well, that's fiction. It's like...
But that's what makes it even more exciting, is because now you've got what could be a fictitious premise is now the real thing.
Yeah, but their lives are not as interesting as the kingdom of Dreamland. And
I don't know. I think Bonang has an interesting story or two.
Well,
and you know what?
I just never care about the average crap pseudo glamorous life of schmelebrities. It's just pathetic, boring and dumb.
All right, well, it's time for us to get to the 5 things you need to know this morning. First of all, 2 men were handed a combined 26 years in jail for defrauding SARS. So it does still happen. I mean, any comment? Because we were worried about SARS, that they'd lost their investigative capacity,
yeah,
right?
That's a decent notch on the bedpost.
Do you know what sort of level of fraud we're talking about? Like, were they just behind on their returns? Bless you, Gareth.
No, their names are Tommy Fortein... He's 66 ironic. Years old.
It What's is ironic?
His surname is Fortune.
Oh.
He was his second name is stolen.
Yeah, they apparently defrauded SARS out of 32 million rand in a scam, and the other guy's name is Cornelius Johannes Krik.
Come on, Cornelius.
Guess what? He's from the East Rand, Cornelius. Yeah. Sentenced to 20 years in jail after pleading guilty to 29 fraud charges.
29.
21 money laundering charges.
So it wasn't a mistake then. It wasn't and like my accountant's dodgy.
One charge of corrupting a public official. So these guys really went deep. I mean, to get 29 fraud charges, 21 money laundering charges, and one charge of corrupting a public official. I'm just amazed by the one charge of corrupting a public official. Sure. I thought that'd be more.
I wonder if the public official is also in trouble for being corrupted. Probably not. But I'd love to understand the mechanics of a scam like that, because some scams are like, I always think to myself, for every one that where a person with a good, whether it's a good scam or a bad scam, that gets caught and exposed, there must be loads that don't. And some of them are like really clever, and you're like, yes, I don't even know how they could have caught you. That's a genius scam. If you can't get away with that, you can't get away with anything. And other things are so bold-faced that you think to yourself, like, either you're a complete moron and you were never going to get away with that, or it was worth a shot, and somewhere oaks are getting away with that. For me, it's like, if you want to launder money on a medium scale, just open an actual laundromat, or in any business where it's all just cash over the table, and or a tattoo shop. But I mean, if you're gonna, you can't claim to be losing 100,000 rand a week at a tattoo shop. But just businesses where everything's cash.
Yeah.
There's a famous coffee place in Parkhurst that are brilliant and lovely and that have not quote unquote been able to get a credit card machine for since I've been going there seven or eight years.
Something dodgy happened.
Oh, absolutely. They're full all the time. They're like a beloved institution in Joburg.
They have an ATM in there now, Gord.
I know they have an ATM in there, but that doesn't go through SARS.
Just a preview. Point. Yeah. They couldn't get a coffee, credit card thing, but they got an ATM.
And they allow you to EFT them.
Guys, I need to go to this place.
It's not hidden.
And they're full. They're very successful. They're definitely making money. Like, even on a quiet day, they're full. On the weekend, you queue. And they take only cash. And I guarantee you that place has never on paper made a profit. Definitely making a loss. Tax.
Well, speaking of tax, going back to SARS for a second, this story, Neo Solanaku says that this is a huge deal for the revenue service. Sentences normally range between 6 and 12 years. We don't have many big sentences, so when it happens, we become very appreciative of it, because then it does what it's intended to do, to be a deterrent. So, be warned, you tax fraudsters. SARS have managed to get some pretty big sentences this week. 800 South Africans are being held in foreign jails around the world. Did you know that?
Oh, that is my worst fear realized.
Oh, yeah. You've seen that banged up abroad, right? Oh. The International Relations Department has urged locals traveling abroad to familiarize themselves with the laws of the countries they visit. And for a few nights, High Rob was such a person in Lisbon.
High Rob.
Yeah, High Rob got locked up in Lisbon.
No way. I saw High Rob posting a picture of him on somewhere overseas with his mum.
In Rome, yeah, that was last week.
He's having the time of his life, but he did go to Lisbon and he did say the police there are very, very uptight. Jeez. And he got locked up for drunken brawling outside of
He got locked up for being chivalrous, really.
That's a good point. Thank you, Ben, for standing up for him.
I don't know if chivalry is a word in Portuguese, but he did. That's what he was guilty of.
So he came to the aid of a damsel in distress.
The department says 800 South Africans are currently being held in foreign jails. 300 of those are in South America, with 140 of them in Brazil.
You don't want to be in a Brazilian jail.
Oh, no.
Like the old song goes, you don't want to be in a Brazilian jail.
Is that how it goes? Is there an old song about that?
There's a robot that keeps looking at me.
How does it go, Gord?
You don't want to be in a Brazilian jail. You don't mind being in an Irish jail, but you don't want to be in a Brazilian jail.
Yeah. Oh, I think I missed that one.
Yeah, it's an old childhood song about the jails you do and don't want to go to.
All right, so
it's like a song of Jaily Jaily.
Those are childhood memories.
The spokesperson of the Department of International Relations says that you must also understand the culture of the country that you're going to. A lot of South Africans are getting into trouble in countries like Dubai and the Emirates because of culture and their rules around it that you might not understand. And there's nothing they can do about that, because in those countries, That's, those governments.
That's have, their jaw. Yeah.
Simple. Women are not allowed to have fun, and God's important. Yes. If you just remember the golden rules.
And also, don't be gay. Being gay is a dreadful idea in some countries.
Oh. Don't, definitely don't be gay.
If you're a gay.
Don't be gay or a happy woman, and then God is. Don't be say anything bad about God, and then you'll be fine. After also, that, you can.
Yeah. Here's a good story. Well, I don't know if it's a good story, but it's fascinating. Could only happen in South Africa. Do you hear that? That is the sound of the University of Limpopo, where students left an exam saying it was too difficult.
Oh, no.
So everybody just walked out of the exam venue. They just...
What?
Yeah. The whole class looked at the exam. About 5-10 minutes, they were all examining the exam paper.
And so they gave the exam an F.
They all then decided, almost en masse, there were a few who sat down and looked confused and bewildered because they'd started answering the questions. But then eventually everybody went, this is too hard, so we're just going to get up and walk out of the exam center at the University of Limpopo, which is, of course, a world-renowned university, which has produced many great scientists and academics.
ULIM, as they refer to it in NASA.
So if you're hiring and someone arrives here with a bright face, bushy tail, and a University of Limpopo certificate...
I chase them out of the building with a stick.
Or just with a maths
problem. No hesitating.
Or just with a maths problem.
Or, yeah, or just with a tough question.
It's a tough question. So there's what's happening at the University of Limpopo. Oh, shame. This is quite sad. I mean, we don't like the father, but you must never blame the son for the sins of the father. Kulibuse Zuma's only son has died after a short illness. A nephew, of course, of former President Jacob Zuma is Kulibuse. His only child died on Tuesday. His name is Kulibusa Ntokozo Zuma. He died at the Nkosi Albert Luthuli Hospital in Durban Tuesday morning after falling ill. And former President Zuma's son, Edward, confirmed the death to the Sunday Tribune and requested the family be given space to mourn.
Shame, man.
Yes. Yeah, it is, it's horrible. You know, nobody wants anything like that to happen to anyone.
Especially kids.
Kulibuse was said to be battling with the loss of his only son. So there's a bit of news. And then water restrictions to be lowered when Cape Town dam levels reach 85%, which they're getting close to.
Yes, but Cape Town only when they reach 85.
Yeah, until then they're going to keep on scalping you for...
They're close to capacity
now. I know. Inundated by an avalanche of complaints, the city's deputy mayor has said he wants water restrictions gradually lowered, but knows very well that the national government will only do so when dam levels reach 85%. Dam levels have again improved over the past week, rising by 1.9% to 62% of storage capacity.
I find that amazing considering how poked they were supposed to be. I mean, they were like at like 8% or something crazy.
But Gordon, like when it rains, I mean there's snow as well, which then obviously then melts and then goes down the mountains into the dams.
That's
right. For sure, but over the course of a series of rainy seasons, the problem was that they, you know, when the dry season and the rainy season were added and divided, they were ending up with less each time.
Yeah.
So, you know, the rainy seasons were not doing the trick. And so now they've not only had one that's put them in positive, which has not been the trend over recent years, but like significantly caught up the deficit. You wonder whether that's really good luck or if there was fuckery afoot to begin with.
Oh. Well, here's what advocacy group Stop Cocked, which means Stop City of Cape Town. Founder Sandra Dixon said, listen to what Sandra says.
Sandra Dixon of
Stop Cocked.
Sandra Dixon of Stop Cocked says, the city has been getting flack for the water issues and they're trying to correct it. They should have never connected tariffs to restrictions because now they find themselves between a rock and a hard place.
Yeah, Patricia.
If they reduce restrictions, like let's say they say, well, you're not restricted so much anymore, then they have to reduce tariffs. So they either have to choose between less money coming in or less water going out.
Or more titties. Water going out. More water they should get out, Nikki Cockcroft to handle their PR.
Oh, cool.
All right, that's the five things
Stop
you need to
cocked.
Know.
I'm all for them.
In 10 minutes, we have covered the world. Now it's time for Ben to give you the sport. But before that, let's look at Bitcoin and Ethereum. Bitcoin nicely trading above $7,000 for the first time in a while. $7,072 at the moment. Ethereum just under $300 at $292 today. Ben, take it away.
Saru are in big financial poo-poo. Pirates player kind of loses the plot, and Seamers are looking to dominate in the fourth test in England and India. 62 million rand. That is what Saru suit person, I don't know what his name is, put in front of the Portfolio Committee of Sport and Recreation yesterday, saying that we're suffering net losses. We're hemorrhaging money here.
Let me ask you a couple of questions because I'm not au fait with how this works. Surely Saru is a for-profit business.
Yes.
Saru owns the stadia?
No.
Around the country? They own the teams?
Springboks, and they own a whole bunch of things within SA Rugby properties. They necessarily own the stadiums.
They're in charge, though, of rugby.
Yeah. South African Rugby Union.
So there's no one else in charge of rugby. It's not like...
It's not a competition.
Yeah, it's not like, for example, where Ben and I both own laundromats, and there are only 10 people in the town, and he gets some of the customers, and then I steal some of those customers from him. There's no competition. It's only Saru in the game.
And they get to obviously have sponsors.
So then we must treat them the same way we would an Eskom or an SAA.
Yeah.
Right?
So that's what they've got. They've got 62 million rand as a net loss. And that's like a drop in the ocean, especially to a politician. But as you pointed out, Gareth, they should not be making a loss. But they said, but wait. It's because those dodgy French won the 2023 Rugby World Cup bid, so they've lost all kinds of sponsorships. Hmm. Well, look, I think World Rugby ultimately looked at South Africa and said, well, it'll be a shithole in 2023, so we don't want to go play rugby there. Plus, apparently, it cost 33 million rand to get the Cheetahs and the Kings into the Pro 14. Of course, they couldn't stay in Super Rugby because Super Rugby is an absolute disaster to start with.
But you told us this was a bad idea.
Yeah. No, look, Super Rugby's a bad idea, but getting them into the Pro 14, why does it cost this much money? It's staggering, really. So they believe they've lost 38.5 million from the World Cup bid going to this dodgy French, and 33 million about putting the Kings and the Cheetahs into the Pro 14. Well. They've had to cut budgets to the smaller unions, but guys, I think, look, just like Eskom, just like all the other parastatals out there. You've got to just be smarter and cut the fat. And I'm not just talking about Thurlow Wakefield here. You've got to basically say, look, okay, this is rugby. You know how many, there are so many different professional rugby players in this country. Some of them are only like making like 5-6 grand a month. Cut that crap out. We don't need more rugby players in this country. We need better rugby players in this country, okay? So club rugby is where it's at. Put a whole bunch of money into that. Who gives a toss about the Griffins playing somewhere in a Currie Cup First Division? You know, it's so bad that some of these teams are forfeiting away games because they can't afford to travel. Currie Cup First Division, throw it in the bin right now. Set it on fire. Let's not waste each other's time. It's bollocks. Put a lot of money into club rugby because club rugby is really fun. It gets communities come together. Suddenly everyone starts watching rugby. Suddenly everyone starts drinking together. Hey ho, we might get some unity here. Black and white people in South Africa following sport. Whoever thought that would be a good idea? Get all the people going to club rugby. So you have varsity rugby, which is huge. School rugby, which is really good. Mm-hmm. Varsity rugby. And then you get the club rugby. So you get this gnarly old bastards who've been playing up until old crocs of like 40. And again, they're all drinking together. So it's creating local revenues. And then we've got Currie Cup. Then we've got Super Disaster. Then we've got the box. How hard is that to work out? Suddenly we have a whole lot less professional rugby players. There's a whole lot less people like the Griffins and the Leopards. Because all those dickbags get a vote anyway when it comes to the Saru General Council.
What are the Griffins? What are the Griffins?
Well, like the Border Bulldogs or whatever. No one gives a toss.
Board of Bulldogs.
Let's just have lots and lots of club rugby doing the wonders here. And then we get a much stronger system.
I think you might have solved their problem.
Gareth, by doing this, less sport administrators. Who woke up and said, you know what, the box lost to Argentina, we need more sports administrators. No one ever said that. Not even sports administrators, because they know they're a dying breed of dickbags. So sorry, just stop messing around here. Stop pleading poverty and having a cry to this recreation committee.
I know they had some issues with selling the shirt sponsor, because it was like things were in massive decline. It was like around about the Alistair Kutsia time. And the sponsorship period of the previous shirt sponsors was up, and they have to have that revenue. They can't just go, oh, screw it, no one wants to pay the full amount. Yep. We'll carry on without it for a while. And the team was like in marked decline, and like nobody wanted to pay what the previous people had been paying, because obviously now it's like that's not as good as a deal from a publicity perspective. And in the end, they created an agreement. They sold it for way less than what they needed and way less than what it had previously been sold for, but they needed that income. they had to settle for that instead of nothing. And then, like, 6 months later, the team started getting quite good again.
Exactly. And so the guys have got a good deal.
They're a bit screwed from that. But, I mean, again, I don't discuss my work or interrupt you too much, but I know that the marketing people from there are really good dudes who try really, really hard with what they have.
Yeah, they are. There's good people within the structure, for sure, Gord. But I think the basic foundation of this whole thing about everyone's got to be part of a union, they've all got to get a slice of the pie, bollocks. They're bringing in nothing. Just let's just put money into club rugby rather.
Right.
Yeah. Then, you know, it's just club rugby does so much for different communities because if the amateur game is strong, then there's at least a springboard to go up rather than having some trumped up guy going, ah, oh, I'm a rugby professional. But meanwhile, what does that even mean? It's just bollocks. In football, Sundowns are out of the CAF Champions League. They lost to they drew 0-0 to Haroya of Guinea yesterday. And they had about countless chances. I mean, come on. There's so many different chances, but I couldn't get into the goal. So therefore, they go out, done in the CAF Champions League, which, of course, they won relatively recently. Pirates, well, they played against Black Leopards last night, and it was a pretty dire sort of first half. And it wasn't going so well for this guy called Gabuza. He was playing, he was fluffing chances like any other South African sports star, PSL player.
Gabuza.
But the crowd was actually calling for him to be substituted. Anyway, so Gabuza then lets loose on this cross, which doesn't get his intended target. Hits a Black Leopards defender, goes in the goal. He claims, of course, it's his goal. Runs up to these guys, takes his shirt off, throws it into the crowd. During the game, he throws his shirt at the people calling for a substitution. And everyone's going, dude, what the hell are you doing? What are you going to play in now? He then walks down the tunnel, just walks off.
what an idiot.
Pirates down to 10 men. Eventually goes to halftime. So now it's like, oh shit, that wasn't very clever. He then comes out in the second half with his leg strapped up, faking some sort of injury with ice in his thigh. He then sits down like he's now in his sympathy. The ref goes, no, screw that. Gives him two yellows, gets a red card, so he's officially sent off. But what an absolute piece of shit. What you know you got no role models in this country with accents like this. The guy, I mean, what a child, an absolute child. And then he fakes an injury afterwards.
But it's also like, how seriously do you want to be taken? It's like economies of scale, right? So if you're a half-assed oak in a half-assed thing, that's like half-assed organization times half-assed person. You got like a quarter ass at best. You know, like I played seven-a-side corporate C-League for the mighty FHM Pumas back in the day. And we played like the bankers from Investec. And like there you would see some prima donna shit. And this was like, this wasn't even good for social level football. We were like C League out of five, third tier out of five in the 93rd tier of football. And you would get like prima donna shit and oaks having fights and dudes taking themselves way too seriously and like, you know, like having internal drama and storming off the field, not in our team, but in other teams. So you think to yourself, like, well, you know, if it's a shitty thing and with shitty people.
That's a good point, Gord. There you go.
Like, whatever, have a fight, storm off, who cares?
The quarter ass PSL.
Yes.
I tell you who got more than a quarter of an arse, therefore he's going elsewhere. That's Simpiwe Chabalala. Now, he was the guy, of course, that scored the wonder goal to open the 2010 World Cup. He's 33 years old now. He's played forever for the Amakosi. He's been at the most derbies. He's played 372 games for Chiefs. How about that? Anyway, he's going to the Turkish Super League side, BB Erzurumspor.
Right.
One more time?
BB
Erzurumspor. I got it. What's wrong with you?
Erzurumspor.
Yeah.
See, a familiar team from Turkey. That's quite something, though, because he's old. He's like 33. And he's being signed by a team overseas. That's great. It shows a lot of work ethic as well. He's not throwing his shirt into the crowd. He's got full arse, this guy. Yeah. That's why you get rewarded. So good for him.
So just to the youth and the young players of South Africa, just know that if you put in a good career, never throw your toys and do stupid quarter-ass things, one day you too, at the end of your career, could play for BB
Erzurumspor. Yeah.
It's possible, guys.
Damn right.
First, Lucas Radebe.
Damn right, Quinton Gord.
Fortune, and now your mate.
Gabuza. What's his name?
Gabuza's the quarter ass guy. Gabuza's we're talking the about the hero playing with BB
Chabalala, yeah.
That's it.
Shirt sales are going to rocket.
Quarter
ass. And then finally, then the cricket. Tomorrow sees the start of the fourth test. That's between India and England. This is very exciting because it's the battle of the seamers. Yeah, who would have thought? The 38 out of the 46 wickets the Indians have claimed have come through Hardik Pandya, Jasprit Bumrah, and a couple of other seamers. So good for these guys because they're adapting.
Bumrah. Seamers.
They're adapting to the conditions. But the big talk around the seamers is Jimmy Anderson. So Jimmy Anderson is currently on 557 test wickets. He's the most prolific English bowler of all time, and he's approaching Glenn McGrath's record. Now, see, I know you're saying, well, what's Glenn McGrath got to do with this? Well, Glenn McGrath is the highest seamer wicket taker in the all-time wicket takers list. Matthew Mullerithuan, he's got 800 wickets. Never be caught ever. That's set in stone. He can go to, that'll be it. Shane Warne's second on 708. And then Anil Kumble, 619. So the spinners have the most wickets. McGrath's got 563. Anderson's got 557. He's going to eclipse McGrath. And then obviously everyone will say, wow, he's the greatest seamer in the world. Bullshit. He's played 141 test matches, okay, to be the 6 wickets behind McGrath. McGrath's played 124. If you want to put some perspective onto that, Dale Steyn, if it wasn't for his injuries, he's played 88 for 421. So Anderson will have the most wickets, sure, but he's also played the most test matches because that's what happens in test cricket. England, Australia and India, they play all the times. I mean, this 5-match test series called the Ashes, what a pure indulgence for guys like Jimmy Anderson. No, I was actually trying not to bag Jimmy Anderson here, and the guy's worked hard again. He's a bit of a Simpi Wishabalala. He's worked really hard. He is why he's got the longevity. But it's ridiculous that he's played that many test matches. And that's what he remembers as. He's not going to be the most prolific or the best seamer in the world, but he will have the most wickets. It's kind of like the Kardashians. They've got massive audiences, but not exactly the nicest people.
They haven't done as much to get those audiences, right?
Like given the most to the world.
Yes, exactly.
Like, Rabada is, I think, going to be the greatest. When you think, if injury-free, this guy's going to do more to the game than any of those guys that I've just mentioned, other than the spinners, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no way he'll play as many test matches because the ICC will try fine him for, I don't know, touching his eyebrows. Or he'll have injuries because he's carrying this Proteas team, which is becoming more and more like lead weight by the day. And then, final fact, he simply won't play as many test matches.
Yeah.
So that is how the cookie crumbles in the sport for today.
All right.
More tomorrow as we head into the weekend. But don't forget, go on to cliffcentral.com and you'll find a whole bunch of other podcasts I've been doing recently with interesting sporting people. Just go on to the GCS features and there you'll see the Bounce Pod.
And Ben will helpfully supply a link to you if you're on social media.
And also help us maybe find out where we can directly order the shirts from. That wonderful Turkish side.
Yeah,
the Turkish side.
All
right, well, if you didn't know, do you know what the color of the year is, Gord? We've been talking about this for the last
color of the year?
Yes, do you think it is closer to a red, an orange, a purple, a green, a pink, or a blue? What's the color of the year for 2018?
My first full year back from Cape Town, and it's Johannesburg is brown. Brown
it's
and beautiful.
It's not brown. It's not all about you, Gord. The color of the year is called ultraviolet.
Ooh, I think that's a spectrum of color and not necessarily a color.
Well, in this case, it refers to a particular Pantone color.
Okay.
And ultraviolet is the color of the year. Do you know how we know this?
No.
Color specialist and interior designer and decorator Sandra Larkin popped in to talk to Lerato Shabalala in the latest episode of Living It Up. You can find out how you can incorporate this color into your home. Download the podcast now, Living It Up, brought to you by Taylor Blinds and Shutters. I saw a big billboard of theirs on the highway yesterday.
Oh.
Yeah, Grayston Drive.
What color was it?
It was light blue. Oh. That's their color. Taylor Blinds perfects your views. You can dress up your windows from your home to the office with an assurance of 60 years. High quality products. Taylor Blinds and Shutters brings home the textures, colors, fabrics, patterns, and innovative materials that your space has been waiting for. If you want to know more, go to cliffcentral.com for all the details.
For a truly ultraviolet 2018.
Well, they also bring the zhuzh factor our studio has been waiting for.
Watch this.
There's a robot in the corner of the studio that keeps looking at me, and I want to know if Gareth's going to give it fire.
I'm going to give it fire. It's called Prometheus.
There's a robot, and Prometheus. It looks at me when I talk, and then it looks at Gareth when he talks, and sometimes it just eerily looks around for no reason.
Gord, you do understand you live in the 21st century, and there's certain technologies such as a camera.
Gordon perhaps? Is completely
that thing looks like from Star Wars.
Yeah,
it's got a face, and it's looking at me judgingly, and it's doing things on its own.
It is automated. It is going to be one of the new innovations that we introduce very shortly, where you can see what's going on in the studio.
Oh, God.
And these machines automatically focus on whoever's talking.
Oh, the whole benefit of this was that no one can see me and I sound more attractive than I am.
Oh, so it's about you again.
Yes. From my perspective, it is about me. When discussing things I like and don't like about doing the show, I'll discuss them from my own viewpoint. Thanks, Ben.
All right, let's turn to Sia while Ben and Gord continue to harangue each other like old bitches.
Battling that out.
Well, that's gender unfair.
This morning, I always just have this love-hate relationship when celebrities do things for charity. But at the end of the day, whether they're doing it genuinely or not, we do at least have the fact that someone is benefiting from it for good. So, case in point, the rapper Drake, he recently visited a seriously ill child in a hospital.
I saw this story. This is very nice, actually.
I think it's so sweet, who has a heart condition, and now I think just because of all of the buzz surrounding her, she has received a heart transplant. So her name is Sophia Sanchez. She's 11 years old, and she originally appeared in a video that she made around the In My Feelings challenge, which is Drake's song, and she filmed it while she was in hospital because of her heart condition. She was jumping out of a wheelchair, she was dancing around the corridors in the hospital while she was still attached to an IV drip, and so this caught Drake's attention to the point where he actually cancelled one of his concerts so that he could go and visit her. And so they spent an afternoon together, and following that and pulling some well powerful strings, Sophia has now received a heart transplant. Sophia was diagnosed with heart failure condition for years, and after undergoing open heart surgery 3 weeks ago, she was given a heart transplant on the 27th of August. Well, according to all of the staff at the hospital, the surgery went well. The first 48 hours following the transplant are always the most critical, but everyone has now said that Sophia received a really good, strong heart, and they will keep her asleep for the remainder of the night, and they thank everyone for their support. But the reason why I bring this up is because I think this is the sweetest thing ever. Sophia just celebrated her birthday, and this is a Facebook clip that I saw of her. When she was just chatting to her mother, she didn't know that she was about to receive the heart transplant. And in the video, she details that she just had two main wishes. The first one was to meet Drake, which she was able to make happen. And the second one was a heart transplant. And this is her reaction to finding out that she's receiving the heart transplant.
She had no idea that he was coming?
No. And the fact that she didn't know.
That could have given her a heart attack, let alone a heart transplant. I mean, no. Poor little girl, you know? It's
really great that a person that needed a heart transplant got a heart transplant.
Yeah,
so that's wonderful, and I'm not knocking that for a second. But it's indicative of the world being pretty screwed up when a person can't get a life-saving heart transplant because it's just not happening for you, little girl. We kind of tried, but it's just not there, and we can't sort you out. Sorry for you. You're going to die, and it's a bummer. And like, cool, do you want some more jelly and custard? But then a talentless R&B rapper with the most irritating music in the universe catches it on social media, comes in for a visit, strings are pulled, and now there's a heart for you. Because Drake came.
Like, that's exactly it.
Join us again tomorrow for Said by Gord on the edge of a cliff face.
I'm really glad that a young girl got another chance at life. But it's like, oh, Drake has picked up on a person who couldn't get a heart and came and fixed it.
I'm kind of with you. I mean, I'm always a little suspicious of this. Like, suddenly,
if Barack Obama had pulled in for a visit and said, look, let me call some people, I'd be like, right, cool. Well, Barack made a plan, and not always a plan can be made.
Well, he's even a worse rapper.
Drake can, you know, he's not. Lyrics, he drops bombs. But if his shit at least rhymes. If Drake can make it happen, then the world is fucked.
Well, listen, he did for this little girl. She might not have got it if it wasn't for him, and that's okay by me.
I'm super glad about that.
All right. Gord, you curmudgeonly bastard.
My wishes are, and it did happen. Well, one of them did, to meet Drake, and that one did happen, and it was great. And my other wish is to get a heart.
Yeah.
Which is going to happen soon.
Surely she should have prioritized the heart and then meeting Drake.
Hey, she didn't say she's listing it.
All right, okay, well, let's go.
Order of importance.
Well, guess what? It happened today. You're getting a heart.
Congratulations.
I'm getting a heart.
Yes, baby.
God, now, you, now I feel terrible because that was really very
sweet.
You
son of a bitch. You should be.
Drake going around and giving women hearts.
Oh, well, look at you, you misery. Oh. All right, well,
go
there it
do
is.
Your good work, Drake. Annoy the shit out of people on the radio and give children hearts. It's worth it.
And that is your advice
for today. You know, you can find anything you like on cliffcentral.com. We have shows about everything. We have shows about sex, about business, about leadership, about health, about law. You just have to look it up. Go in there and type in a name and you'll see. We've probably interviewed them at some point. Go and take a look. There's so much to choose from. Brand new series launching in the last couple of weeks, including ones about money, series about health, series about men and their role in South African society, and so much more. Go and take a look. You'll see what I mean. CliffCentral.com.